Welcome to the 5 for 2 podcast with me, your host Adele, where we say no to careers where you're trading 5 days of misery for 2 days of fun. A place we discuss all things career, confidence, and money moves. I want to motivate, teach, and empower ambitious women to achieve more, earn more, feel more confident, and enjoy the work they do. It's all about believing you can have everything you want in your career and then going and getting it. So if you're ready, let's get into it.
Hello, 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 listeners. We may have some technical difficulties this week. I am recording on a new platform, so bear with me if we do. But listen, I'm sure this will all be cleaned up in post-production. But if it sounds different to usual, guys, reach out to me. Let me know. Let me know your thoughts. You know I like to have like the back and forth chat. So reach out to me on LinkedIn or Instagram. Let me know if the episode sounds like all the others, or it sounds better, or it sounds worse, because, you know, your girl needs to know. Anyway, jumping into the episode, today I am joined by a fellow coach, fellow business owner, and also someone I now call a friend, who I was lucky enough to meet through networking on LinkedIn. So the power of networking, guys, you know, I say it all the time, connect with people, you never know where it could lead. But without further ado, we are joined today by the workplace optimization cultural architect, the auntie of a 3-year-old who's behind the weekly Wow Wednesday series on LinkedIn, and founder of Chapter 2, which is a people-centered organizational leadership and employee development consultancy. And as a bonus, she's also born and raised island girl. So not first gen like me, you know, like, you know, holding onto the Caribbean roots. She really is born and raised island girl. So we can talk all things soca and Afrobeats too, and maybe some bashment and some reggae, who knows. But yeah, I want to introduce you guys to Charmaine Greenford. She's amazing. Charmaine, say hello to the listeners.
Hi everyone, so happy to be here today. And yes, we can definitely do reggae too. That's covered.
Love it. See guys, island conversations, we love it. And I just want to give a little bit of backstory. This episode came about because me and Charmaine got into a really interesting conversation when she visited London briefly not too long ago on her layover. She was only here for a few hours, but I'm telling you, in those few hours we got chatting. It was so lovely to meet her in person. But the conversation that came up was we were talking about all the things that people, and mostly women to be honest, think that they shouldn't be doing in their career that they absolutely should. And Charmaine was like, I tell people these things all the time because who's going to check you, boo? And I was like, oh my gosh, that's the name of that's the title. That is the name of our podcast episode. We need to have this conversation. We need to share with all my listeners, what are the things that you think you cannot do in your career that you absolutely should? We're going to break some myths, and Charmaine is going to be dropping some gems and some knowledge on you guys to help you. So grab a cup of tea, grab a cup of coffee, whatever it is, and we're going to get straight into this conversation. So Charmaine, before we even get into the conversation, talk to us a little bit about who you are and how you got to where you are.
Of course, and thank you again. So I grew up in HR, and you know, I first went to school for computer science and then switched into HR and built my career there. But one of the things that was really important to me was what was the people side, right? And how do we really bring that to life? I hail from Barbados. You know, you mentioned that I was an island girl. So the island is Barbados, born and raised, moved to the US, and literally just going through the path of life. So now I, after almost 2 decades in HR, said, I'm done with this in corporate spaces. I want to help people in a way that's more meaningful, more tangible, and tell them the things that I could not tell them while I was in HR working for somebody else's company. So that's how we got here. And Chapter 2 was born.
I love that. I love that you saw the issues that were happening and you decided to step back and actually help people with the issues and help people navigate corporate. What I love about Charmaine is she's not telling everyone, oh, we should all leave corporate, or we should all become entrepreneurs, or we should, there's no shoulds with Charmaine. Charmaine wants you to have the best experience wherever you choose to be. And I think that's really important. And I love that about you. Like, I love that you want to help people. You want to help organizations be the best they can be so that people can work for great organizations. And then you don't want to dictate to people where they should or shouldn't be, but you want to support them so they can have the best experiences. And I think this conversation is definitely going to help contribute to that. Also, anyone listening, did you notice that not only is Charmaine a country changer because she left Barbados and has moved to the US, but she's also a career changer because, like, she just gave you her background. Like, computer science was what her degree was in, but then she went into human resources. Guys, so many of you listen to this and you say, oh, if my degree's in this, then I have to stick to that. Why? There are no rules. And that's the first rule that we're going to, that's the first myth that we're going to bust. So Charmaine, how did you get into human resources if that's not what you studied? Like, if, or that's not what you were necessarily thinking of when you decided to do computer science?
Yeah, so the thing I knew when I went to college was that even though I was super into computer science and information systems, what I actually ended up getting in, because I took one programming class and was like, this is for the birds. But my uncle was into computer science, and that's really why I signed up, because I was obsessed with him at the time. And the thing that I knew for sure was that I didn't want to be like the other computer people, as I called them at the time I was around. Didn't have the ability to relate to people, weren't communicating effectively, and I'm not by any means saying this is what everybody in that space is like. It was just what my experience at the time was like. So I minored in psychology because I wanted to be able to understand people, because even at a young age, I understood that you're not going to move anywhere. You're not going to move forward if you're not able to relate to and communicate effectively with people. So that's really how that came about. And because I was taking some psychology classes, I just ended up randomly, you know, learning about HR. And then because I was majoring in computer science, I got an internship at my college campus, and it was with the technology department, not IT, like the back-end computer, but larger systems. We were going to be digitizing the university. And through that experience, the HR team was the first team that we were bringing on board to the digital age. And that's really how I got my first exposure. And HRIS, HR Information Systems, was the first group, followed by benefits. So, and then I realized, oh, there's a way to blend this people thing with this technology thing. And that's how the story started.
I love it. I love it. A lot of my listeners are career changers. So it's always nice to hear a story about someone who studied one thing and was able to connect it to other things. Because I'm such a believer in making connections. You don't ever have to leave anything behind. Like, a lot of people, a lot of women don't want to change industry, not because they don't want to go into the industry, but they feel like, oh, my degree's wasted. All those years I spent studying are wasted. But you've just shown how not only did you change the path, but you took your degree with you. And it helped you. It was your stepping stone. So I love that. So thank you for sharing that. But let's get into this conversation though, because I know that's what everyone is here for. That's what we're here for. So I'm just going to get started. Let's get into these CVs. Yeah. Because the first thing that's even triggered this conversation is we were talking about that, and we were talking about people's CVs, people's resumes. We were talking about the things that they think they can't do. And one of the first things was, can you change your job title on your CV or resume? What is Absolutely. Your answer to that, Charmaine?
Absolutely. And please do. One of the things that people sometimes don't recognize, and I'm saying this as someone who built their career in HR, you are submitting your resume in an ATS, applicable tracking system. And the chance that it gets picked up by a recruiter, these people are not subject matter experts and deep experts in the area that you are, right? They're screening, right? So even if you have someone, for example, who's a technical recruiter and they may be very well versed, they're not going to be able to take all of the technicalities that you are aware of and translate. That's not their role. That's not what they've built their profession in. So put a title on your resume that easily relays what it is you have done. Right. So, for example, even for me on LinkedIn, there was a company that I was at. I was part of their parent company. And when I moved from one of the divisions to another divisions, even though my technical title was Chief Talent and Culture Officer, I changed it, and it's on my resume changed, and it's on LinkedIn changed now that says like Head of HR for Media Platform Groups, because I knew that the media side of things, you know, at least in that industry, would be better understood, and just being over platform groups, which has a lot of technology embedded in it, would really be something that others understood. So I changed it to reflect not what the actual title on, you know, the systems were in the back end, but what someone else could understand. Please do that. Some companies are making up titles and you have that. Nobody knows what it means. Make it make sense.
I totally agree. Job titles are made up. I'm guilty of it as well. As a director and a manager, I have made up job titles because I like the sound of them.
There you go.
Those job titles are not going to help you when you leave my company and go somewhere else. So guys, change the title. And if you are moving industry and your responsibilities are that of what you want to apply to. So sometimes you're in a different industry, but you do the duties of the new industry that you're moving into. Change your job title. Change it so it's more relatable to the new industry. Your CV job title makes no difference, especially when the information contained in it is true. We are not telling you to lie on your CV. We are telling you that job titles are made up and you get to make them up. Someone actually said on my LinkedIn recently, when I posted something about this, they said, and I think it was a great point, your CV is a marketing tool.
Yes.
Marketing. When we watch adverts on TV, and I'm not going to say specific names, but for famous luxury brands or like a drink, a well-known soft drink. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. A well-known soft drink that is always on the TV. It comes in a can or a bottle. And we all, like a lot of people drink it. Not me personally, but a lot of people drink it. It's known around the world. They use marketing. Like they use marketing of like a family having fun. Listen, drinking that drink is not going to make your family suddenly have fun. But it is a marketing tool. Your CV is your marketing tool. You are advertising what you're able to do so that you can get in a room and then do a full pitch. So use it the way it was intended. Your LinkedIn's the same. So I just thought that was a really interesting comment when someone was like, your CV is a marketing tool. And I agree. Use it for marketing. Use it for selling yourself. And if that means changing your job title, like Charmaine just said, I love the title that she changed hers to because it sounds totally different. There is nothing wrong with that. And again, who's going to check you?
Who's going to check you, boo? Like,
right?
And I love that you said that. And, you know, just a double click into that. I worked in marketing and advertising for almost a decade. So I was a part of companies creating campaigns to do exactly what you're talking about. Convince people to do stuff. Sometimes not the best stuff for them. So really, it's an entire business model built around convincing you to do something or to get into something that maybe you wouldn't have thought of. So Adele's absolutely right. Think of it as marketing. You are convincing somebody, selling a story. And if that story is not sold, your campaign hasn't landed.
Oh, guys, you heard it out of the mouth of someone who was in advertising for over 10 years. She said your campaign hasn't landed. The truth is, if you are convincing someone, you're trying to convince them that you deserve to be in the room to get an interview. If you're not getting in the room to get an interview, then like Charmaine said, your campaign isn't doing what it needs to do.
Absolutely.
And that is so important. So what I want to ask you next then is, if someone has leadership experience, for instance, but has never actually had a leadership title, so they've never been called a manager, they've never been called the senior, they've never just had that title where they're in charge, but they have a lot of leadership experience, should they be talking about that? Can they say that they've been in leadership on
Absolutely.
Their resume?
And again, who's going to check you, boo? Like, seriously, we really have to go back to this. If you, and I tell people this as well, right? There's not a responsibility, whether it's in life or, you know, business, that you're not leading in some aspect. So do you, you know, are you a parent? Are you a sibling? Are you a spouse? Are you a child of someone? You are leading in some aspect of your life. You're leading someone else. You're having to lead yourself. So absolutely, talk about it. And when it comes to the workplace, if you're the person that people are coming to, whether or not you have the official title for direction to help them project manage, you are managing other people. You are leading them. So put it on your resume. If you're a project manager, call yourself project manager lead or lead project manager. But put that word in there so that someone understands that you are leading and directing others. Absolutely. Please do it. No one's going to check you, I promise.
I love that. And something came up. Someone actually asked me this question and I thought it would really be good to bring this up. Because when we're saying like, who's going to check you? Someone said to me like, oh, if I change my job title, then when they go for my reference and it has a different job title, it's going to be a problem. And I very much was like, So why can't you just say it at interview? Why can't you just go into more detail? Your CV is a summary of your overall experience. So when you go for interview, you can do the explaining at interview. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, Charmaine, what do you think?
Yes, yes, and yes. And I would tell people to do that 1,000 times over because, you know, we have this false sense sometimes, people, that, you know, someone's going to call us out for something. We build up this anxiety so much that it stops us from doing the things that are actually best serving our interest, right? We talked about the fact that your CV is your marketing campaign, right? You need someone to pay attention. Once you get the interview, explain it. I've certainly done that, right? So I've said, you know, if you're going to do a check, here's what the system title is going to say. At our organization, we're really title flat. So this is the title I use to convey the work that was being done, right? There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I think if we overthink it, it becomes a problem. But people can understand you using other language to explain something to make it easier for someone else to understand. I personally think other people would appreciate that.
Well, thank you for saying it like that, because I think the way that just landed, it really resonated with me. So I feel like that will resonate with a lot of people, because you just saying that a lot of the times we make things a problem that are just not a problem. And if you make it an issue, the person you're talking to will feel that and then they will make it an issue. But if you say it's not a big deal and you're just like, oh yeah, by the way, and I love the way you worded it as well, Charmaine. I love the way you worded it. So anyone who was just listening, just rewind and take Charmaine's words, because the way she worded it was perfect. But you, if you don't make it an issue and you're like, oh, it's no big deal, I promise you it's not a big deal. It's a big deal when you make it an issue. I remember leaving a job and only being there for like 11 weeks and people saying, oh my gosh, how are you going to put that on your resume? How are you going to put that on your CV? And aren't you worried how they'll look at it? Absolutely not. I didn't care. So then when I went into the next interview and they asked me, I didn't make it a big deal. Guess what? Neither did they. They were like, oh yeah. They didn't care. I didn't make it a problem. So it's not a problem. So I really love the way you answered that. So thank you for sharing your thoughts on that.
I'm happy to. And a lot of this, honestly, Adele, is based on the fact that we've been fed a lot of false narratives over the years, right? And we don't recognize that the world has shifted. So if someone was air quote job hopping before, that was a problem. I tell people to job hop. If the only way you're going to increase your marketability, increase your experiences, diversify your thought patterns, diversify the people in your network, and get more money is by changing. You will make more money going to another company than you will staying at the same company for 3 or 4 years for their 2 to 3% merit increases, if you get that at all. If you want to come back. But just know that if you leave, when you come back, you're going to be making more money than you would have if you stayed. That, I stamp my name on that one.
Teach the people. That is so true, because I've left the company and gone back before. And while I was there, they didn't give me the pay rise. When I left and they got me to come back, they gave me the big, big, big pay rise. So you are very right. Please teach the people. Just based on what you just said, I already know your answer to the next question, but we need to speak about it. We have to. Yeah. Because do you need another qualification for a promotion or a career change?
No. Stop. Stop it now. For what? For what? What is it going to prove? Well, let me tell you something. I have my bachelor's, you know, I got my master's, all of this stuff. Please do not ask me to remember one class. I cannot name one class I took, and more importantly, what I learned. I don't remember it. So what are we really doing, right? What is another qualification going to prove? Now, unless you're in a specialized field that requires some type of licensure, so you have to get some type of qualification or keep it with continuing education credits. No, absolutely not. But most of the times when I hear people talking about this, it is just stuff to add. What are you adding to? Because everything you say yes to, including that next qualification that you're going after that is not going to matter to anybody else, you're saying no to something in your life that actually would have meaningful change for you.
Thank you for sharing, because recently, and not even recently, in the last few years, it has been reported so much that women are so qualified. We are so highly qualified.
Overqualified.
And we're getting to a point in society where women are way more qualified education wise than a lot of men. Like, we're much more highly qualified than men, especially in certain groups like Black women and things like that. But in general, women are more educated than men. Yet, can I just remind everyone who's listening, men are still way better paid than us. So less educated, more paid. What does that say to you guys? The qualifications are not necessary. The way we maneuver through our corporate journey are necessary. And I don't want anyone to think that I'm saying that qualifications are not good for anything. Qualifications are a great thing, but they are not the only way to get jobs. If they were, nobody would ever change industry. If your qualification was the only way to get in a job, half these men that run companies that are not even educated or have what you would call a school qualification, like they're not academically qualified, but they run multi-million dollar companies, multi-million pound companies, because you need more than a qualification. I am such a big believer in a qualification is information. How you implement that information shows whether or not that qualification has helped you or not. Just having it isn't helpful. Being able to implement what you have learned is what makes it helpful. But you don't need a new one, please. And I'm so happy you said no, because you don't need another qualification. Sometimes I hear people talking online and they're like, oh, just go and get another certification. And go, no, because how many of you have gone and got another qualification and then still couldn't get the job? Or in your current job, you're very highly qualified and you are still paid the same as someone who's not qualified or someone who is less qualified than you.
Yes.
I remember we spoke about something like this. Charmaine, we were speaking about like being in jobs where we found out that our colleague who was maybe less qualified, less experienced, was being paid the same or more.
Right. And we won't even get into all the other issues that came with those examples, but it happens, right? And the reality is it's everything that you talk about in your podcast, right? How are you selling your story? How are you presenting the things that you've done? We are in a storytelling society. That is from the dawn of time, the way that, you know, evolution has happened, the way that we have advanced as people is by passing on stories, right? So it's why if you can paint a visual for someone of what you've done, that's going to land way better than if you're rattling off a bunch of certifications and degrees. If you want to get that stuff, go for it. That's your business, right? Who's going to check you on getting it? No one, right? But if you are doing it solely because you have convinced yourself that's the only way to progress, that is not. It is not. And you're killing yourself for not much payoff.
Oh, totally agree with that. Totally agree with that. And the fact that you said that we live in a storytelling society is so true. Look at social media. People want to know your business. I don't know if you've seen it, but currently everyone is in a chokehold with the lady who has 50 stories on TikTok.
What do you think I was watching earlier today? I was watching a YouTube summary of that, okay? Because
I promised I wasn't gonna watch it. I'm on number 11, guys. I said, I promise. It's been like 4 days. I said, I'm not listening to it. It's ridiculous. I'm on number 11 because it's in a chokehold. I keep hearing little bits and pieces and I'm like, now I need to hear it for myself.
Yes.
Guys, we're nosy. As a society, we are in people's business. And listen, it's your business if you're in other people's business. They ain't got nothing to do with me because I'm in people's business too. I love a stranger's business. Listen, people are nosy. So if you can storytell, if you can sell a story, you will move up faster in your career than, just like Charmaine said, having a list of qualifications, just having a list. You can rattle them all off, but if you can't tell someone how they're going to help them make money, because let's be honest, corporate cares about money. If you can't tell someone how your qualification is going to help make them money, make their company have a bigger reach, make their company get more customers, then they don't care. They honestly don't care, because we have to be honest. The corporate world is the corporate world.
Yes.
And we have to understand good, the bad and the ugly. But when it all said and done, it's about profit. That's what it's about. It's about this money. Every industry is about making money. So let's just all think about it in that way. And if the lady on TikTok with the who did I marry, that lady, if she has had you in a chokehold, that is the evidence that you need, that storytelling, whether that's through your CV, whether that's on your LinkedIn, whether that's in interviews, storytelling is what gets interest. Storytelling is what has got this woman how many millions of views?
Millions.
Guys, You just need a portion of that to get in the room. So it's time to start storytelling and not worry so much about getting another qualification. You are already highly qualified. So many of my listeners have degrees and master's degrees and reach out to me and say, Adele, I'm not even anywhere close to what I thought I'd be salary-wise and title-wise, just in my career. And it's not because they're not highly educated, insanely intelligent women. It's because they haven't learned the power of the storytelling.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can't believe that you're away on that TikTok thing as well.
Oh my goodness. And let's think about this, right? In a society where our attention spans are like gnats, she has 50 posts.
Right.
And people are binging this like some new show on one of those, some channel has dropped and they're binging it. So it's all about the story and the hook and how you're able to convey that. It has nothing to do. No one's talking about her degrees or her background or anything, right? Her degree, her qualification is life.
Right. No one's asking, are you a social media influencer or a social media marketer? Did you study? No one's asking these women those questions.
Nope.
They are saying, wow, your story is interesting. And you are getting more views than people that have probably been spending years trying to become influencers.
Yes.
She has done it in one sitting. Also, people are talking about her because they're like, why did she make 50 episodes? That's ridiculous. Yet we're all there listening.
And in my mind, this is going to turn into some book deal, some movie deal, yes, or something, right? Because
right,
this is fire. So that is exactly.
She dared to be different,
yeah,
right? Don't you agree? She dared to be different. Like literally, like what we were saying, who's going to check you?
No, right. And I bet you companies are going to be coming to her, wanted to do deals, wanted to do brand deals, wanted to do partnerships because she told her story well. And that's what we're talking about here today, everyone. It's what's your story and how are you telling it? And when we also think about this, there are many people who have a lot of honorary degrees that are multi-billionaires based on the work that they were doing. So if the Mark Zuckerbergs could get an honorary degree 12 years after leaving Harvard, right? And, you know, not that other people don't have degrees, but, you know, if I think about someone like Oprah, you know, the late Dr. Maya Angelou, they had so many honorary degrees bestowed upon them, right? When you are doing the work and when you are doing something that other people are interested in, they're going to come to you with offers. They're going to come to you with things that you didn't even think about. And they're not going to care about what you do have because they're going to offer you what you don't have.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's oh, that was just the perfect sentiment. I love that. I absolutely love that. So we don't get stuck on the TikTok,
yes,
lady, no matter,
yes,
how good she is.
No matter how good, right?
How good
she is. We'll text about her.
Literally, we will, because this evening I'm going to be watching another 5 episodes at least. But have you noticed, mm-hmm, that many, and I'm going to say women, not even people, mm-hmm, many women think talking about money, because I've touched on it a little bit since we've been talking, but talking, mm-hmm, about money is bad, and that they can't negotiate. Like if they get a good offer, like what looks good, or even if it just looks decent, that they can't really negotiate because it's going to put someone off. It's going to make the company maybe withdraw the offer or like, so what are your thoughts?
Absolutely. And I think this goes back to society and conditioning and like women are supposed to be seen a certain way, you know, and you know, there's so many studies about this, right? It's not that women fall short in negotiations because it's a lack of skill. It's societal biases that we are coming against, right? So the likability factor, the more aggressive a woman might come across, right? And aggressive could just be she is demanding or advocating for something that someone else has decided is not ladylike, whatever that means, it already reduces her likability factor. So part of it is understanding, based on whoever you are and whatever your intersectional identities are, what are the negotiation stereotypes and biases you're going to face? And what is the plan that you have to address those as you're approaching approaching negotiations?
I totally agree with that. Like the ladylike thing. I'm so happy you brought that up because if you didn't, I would have. Like we get taught like, oh, it's not very ladylike to talk about money. It's a bit crass. It's a bit like we get taught like, don't,
yeah,
talk about money. Men talk about money all the time. And we all say, oh, they're a boss. They're a leader. Right. We talk about money. It's like, ugh, she's so gross. Why would she speak about money? But listen, unfortunately, we live in a world where money pays the bills.
That's what it
these,
is.
These trips and holidays also are not going to pay for themselves because, you know, that's what I like to spend my money on. A,
yes,
lot of you spend money on nice meals, nice clothes, whatever it is you enjoy spending money on. A lot of people do charitable work. Like one of my closest friends is trying to invest her money because she wants to open an orphanage overseas. Like, I know people that use their money in so many different ways, but guess what? It all takes money. So if you're not willing to have the conversation, the problem is we're taught not to have the conversation as women because it's not ladylike and so forth. But then when you do have the conversation, it's usually, I don't have enough money. The household ain't running right. I haven't got this. So we still have conversations about money. We're just taught it's okay for us to talk about money when it's a negative thing. When we're talking about struggle, women are supposed to talk about money. But if we're talking about how do you get more, we're not supposed to talk about it.
Right. And I think it's on women to also change that. Because we yes. need to be talking to each other about it more. We need to be more mm-hmm. transparent with each other about here's what I'm getting. Here's what I'm working on. Here's what I was told. Here's what I've been exposed to. And we need to not gatekeep, because mm-hmm. gatekeeping is hurting us, right? Because men are going to talk about it. They're going to tell each other. They're going to encourage each other, whether or not they have the qualifications. Like I love the boldness of men sometimes. You know, often tell a story, and I do teach in workshop on negotiation too, you know, specific around severance, but really helping people understand there's a bunch of stuff in the workplace that you can and should be asking for. The worst you're going to get told is no. You know, I learned very early on, always counter your offer. Counter it. You may not get exactly what you countered with, but you are likely to get more than what they initially offered you. Right? Counter it. Who's going to check you on that? No one. Counter it.
Right? Right? If they say no, they say no. That's like, people are allowed to say no, just like they're allowed to say yes. But if you do not ask at all, it's already a no. Like, and countering is such a key one, because in one of my last jobs, I remember I was like, right, I'm ready. I'm going to ask for more than they're offering. Like, I'm ready to negotiate. And I went in and I asked for more. They gave that money to me so easily that I should have asked for even more. I knew once they said yes, I knew that I was well below their actual budget.
Yeah.
I knew that there was more money, because I countered and I asked for more than they were advertising, and they did not even flinch. Within 10 minutes, I got a call back and they were like, yeah, absolutely.
And that is a perfect example for why we should always raise the question. I had a family member that I told, hey, this is what they're offering you, request this. Because I had done some research, this is what the area mm-hmm. is paying. And I wrote the letter for them and everything. They chickened out and and changed the number I put in there. And to this day, which is 4 years later, they always tell me, I wish I had not been so afraid, because you wrote the letter for me. All I had to do was send exactly that, and how easily they came back. Like you're saying, 10 minutes. I think they got back to this family member in less than 24 hours with a yes. And that was, you know, 12%, what they settled on was 12% more than what they were, you know, originally offered. Wow. And what I had put in there was, you know, 18 to 20% more. So maybe they might not have gotten to 18 to 20, but I know for sure in my heart they would have gotten more than that 12.
And that's the point of negotiation, right?
Yes.
You ask for 20% more, and yeah. they beat you down to 17. Yeah. But it's still more than maybe the 10% you would have got if you'd just gone in normal. So it's always better to go high.
Yes.
And let them negotiate you down. If you are a good candidate, and I think that's what a lot of women don't feel like, if you are a great candidate and you stand on your value, you will negotiate. I think a lot of our work as women is to stand on our value. Like, I didn't start negotiating bigger salaries or more money or extra benefits because I love to negotiate a benefit more than anything else. I want some extra paid annual leave.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff I like to negotiate. Mm-hmm. But I didn't start doing that till I stood on my value. A lot of my issues coming up were, I'm not qualified in human resources or in like the recruitment world that I'm working in. Mm-hmm. So I let people get away with underpaying me, even though I've held the title of HR manager, even though I hold the title of director, I will let you underpay me because I feel inferior. And that was a me thing. I felt inferior because even though I was there and I had the seat, I didn't feel like I deserved it because I hadn't studied. Mm. And I think as women, when we own our value, that's when we get our money, because we decide, like, I stopped settling when I was like, wait, I might not have the qualification, but I hold this seat because I am good at what I do. I really have solved some problems, helped this company a lot, saved them a lot of money, saved them a lot of lawsuits. Like, I really am that girl. Why on earth am I letting these people play with my pockets?
Oh my God. I love this. And you are 100% right. And I wish that we would do this more. And this is one of the things I talk about, right? So there's this book that I read years ago, and it's called, you know, Get Into Yes, Negotiate an Agreement Without Giving In. And it was a concept that Roger Fisher, William and Bruce Patton introduced in this book. And it talked all about the BATNA, right? And what that stood for was Best Alternative to Negotiated Agreement, right? So essentially, that's your trump card to make the deal happen to your advantage, right? So being prepared for that. So what's your best alternative negotiated agreement, right? So if you really wanted 20% and you know they're going to talk you down, but really, you know, 15% is really what you were targeting, then you go in with the 20% knowing you're going to be beat down, but you also have to be willing to walk away if that number that they're settling on is really far below what you were viewing as your BATNA. Because if you start settling from then, it will always be you having to negotiate your worth because you've let somebody else set what that value is.
Oh, absolutely. Don't let other people set your value. Absolutely. And that's exactly it. We have to stand on our value. And there's a lot of work sometimes for women. We have to do a lot of the internal work for us to really be like 10 toes down. Mm-hmm. I will not take less than this. And if it is going to be less than this, I have to be willing to walk away. Because I think when we don't walk away is when people are basically playing in our face, because they're like, ha, you didn't think you were that good. And we was right. Versus, I know I'm this good. Bye.
Yeah.
And if it means that you lose the offer, you lose the offer. There will be a better one.
And one of the things you said just now, you talked about, you know, your support and evidence, right? Which is something that I always also tell people about. What have you done? Like, you talked about the fact, I know I've saved these people money. I know I've increased their bottom line. You have to be able to answer that for yourself and not say, oh, well, I was a part of. No, even if you were part of the team that did that, if you weren't part of the team, they couldn't have done it. So own it.
Right? Oh my gosh, right? And that's something we do that a lot. Like, we say, oh, we all did it. No. Yes, we all might have done it. But if I wasn't a part of it, I'm one of the pieces that made it turn. If I take one bit out of my TV, one small cog, the whole TV stops working. So that's how important that one thing, right? Jenga. Exactly. One piece. There might be 10 pieces of something, but if you're one of those 10 and you get removed, nothing works the way it is meant to work. Oh my gosh, I love that you said that. Oh, I love that you said that. I love it. See, this is why I like talking to you, because we really get to it. Like, we really get to the nitty gritty.
And the other thing is, who's going to check you on your support and evidence? No one. So this whole thing is about who's going to check you, boo. And all the things we've been talking about, there's everything we've talked about. No one can check you on these things because no one is you. No one has your special sauce. No one thinks the way you do. So when you're talking about your support and evidence and the stuff that you've done, no one else can claim that but you.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. They are yours. Like, who's going to check you?
Yes.
For real. Like, who are we worried about? As women, what is it that we're worried about? Are we worried that the CV job title police are going to come and get us? Yeah. Are we worried that the negotiation police are going to come and get, like, what is it that
and
is stopping
us? What
are
they doing?
Right. Oh, Adele, Charmaine, what you asked for was a bit excessive. Okay. But does that change? If someone really said that to you, does it change any part of your life? Like,
absolutely,
if someone said
not
to me, Adele, you asked for too much. Charmaine, you asked for too much money. What changes in your life? Okay. I asked for too much money and what would actually change? We get so scared of nothing, because what changes? Yeah. Even if you get a no, even if you ask for something and you get a no, what has changed in your life? Nothing. You're exactly where you already were.
And we have to have grace too, to understand that the people sometimes telling us no themselves have been rejected throughout their lives. And if because they haven't seen it, they don't believe it to be possible. So their no to you is a projection onto you based on the rejection that they have experienced. And sometimes that no has nothing to do with you. It's just based on what that person has been exposed to. And we are all, as human beings, as limited in life based on what we've been exposed to. So if someone hasn't been exposed to that or doesn't have that understanding, they're going to say no. You know, I've worked in HR my entire career, right? And I have friends and family who have worked in a not-for-profit world and corporate world. salaries don't bother me because I've seen all sorts of numbers, right? I've seen people getting paid 4 million, 40,000, 400,000, 40 million, right? For me, it's an extra zero. But for people who've been in spaces where, you know, maybe they haven't made a lot of money, you know, where it's been a fixed mindset, not a growth mindset, when you challenge them with something else or try to tell them, oh, we'll request this, it feels just like that family member. It feels so uncomfortable, they reject what you're saying. And we have to recognize that that's what happens sometimes when we're negotiating. And particularly, you know, I've found, I'm not saying all women, right? So when I've negotiated with other women who might have been in leadership, it's sometimes been a little bit more challenging because maybe that woman has experienced a lot of rejection. So someone being what she may perceive as bold enough to request that is stirring up something in her. So we really have to have grace to understand sometimes it's nothing to do with us. It doesn't mean that you're not worth that. Shoot, it doesn't mean you're not worth more. It just means that the person you're speaking to doesn't have that lens to go from.
Ooh, and you know that I never really thought of it like that, but you are so right. I always think about it like that when it comes to family and friends. And because I feel like when people say that you can't do something, I tend to feel like they can't see themselves doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if I speak to someone who's highly qualified in their industry and I say like, oh, you don't need a qualification to change industry, and they push back automatically and they're like, of course you do. I often think it's because they wasn't able to do it that way, or they can't see how it is possible, or they got rejected when they tried to do it that way. But I've never really thought about that in terms of like negotiations, in terms of money. And actually you're spot on, because you might be asking someone who had tried to do what you're currently trying to do and failed, or who weren't bold enough or confident enough to do what you did. So they are also, it's almost like their defenses go right up. They're offended immediately because how dare you? How dare you trigger something in me? And actually you're right. We have to give people grace, because that no could be coming from somewhere way deeper than you think. And you've personalized it. And now you think that one no is no. And I tell this story a lot, and anyone who listens to my podcast knows, I was told no from someone I highly respected in human resources. Mm-hmm. I had known her for years, and she interviewed me and told me in the interview, this is not for you. Recruitment and human resources are just not for you. You shouldn't do this. I'll help you get a better teaching job, but stick to what you know. Basically, she said, stick to your day job. I cried my eyes out. But if I had let that one no deter me, I would not now have an almost 15-year strong career. I would never have been a human resources manager. I would have never been a director of a company, because I would have stayed in teaching because I got a no. And I got a harsh no, because like I said, this is someone I really respected. She was very well known in sort of the human resources world that I was trying to get into. And she was very well respected. She was a CEO. Mm-hmm. She was like HR VP. Like, she was a big deal. If I had let that no deter me, I wouldn't even be here on this podcast right now, being able to help other people. I would never have met Charmaine. Yep. Like, there's so many things that wouldn't have happened. But yeah, the way you put it about money and negotiating, I would have never thought of it like that. So I love that you dropped that, because I know a lot of people listening and are going to now have a different viewpoint maybe when they go into their next negotiation. And if they get a no, they might not take it as personally just from what you said. So thank you for sharing that.
My pleasure.
So before we finish up, because this has been a very fun chat, I'm going to ask, based on the last question where we were talking about money, we might as well finish it off. If someone is career changing, so you are changing industry altogether, and they don't necessarily have all the experience and they don't have a qualification at all, can they still negotiate?
Yes. I mean, that is the short and long answer. Yes. And more importantly, you should. Because what you are bringing is a different set of skills to that role that you are applying to than the traditional people would have. So many years ago, I remember someone who worked, you know, in an advertising, they were in account management, right? So really responsible for managing the health of the account and work with the clients. And they wanted to get into photography at the company. And I remember saying to the CEO and the global chairman at the time, we should let this happen. And here's why. Here's all the things that being in account management has taught this person that we do not currently have on anyone who is documenting visually what it is that we're working on. And this person went on to be uber successful, not only at the company, but in things that they've done since. So again, it goes back to the story that you're able to tell. How can you translate what you have done and let people understand what the benefit is to what you will be doing? And specific to women, we really need, and Google did this study years ago, right? Where they were trying to explore why is it that engineers, you know, we have more engineers and people who are men in engineering positions and senior roles than we do women. And it was because, and again, this goes back to society and we need to reject all this nonsense, especially, you know, with the audience of women here, is women were rated until they had 100% of the qualifications, like literally checking the box before they applied. Men were somewhere around 60% before they applied, and they were getting it because Google wasn't looking for them to have all of the items checked. They were looking for them to raise their hand and help develop them once they raised their hand, but women weren't even raising their hands. And sometimes women sit and we wait for somebody else to recognize. I have coached so many women who have said things to me, but my boss should know what I'm doing and recognize it. And if I keep working hard, they'll give me the promotion or the increase. And I'm saying to them, how are they going to know that that's what you're interested in if you're just taking status quo? Stand on your standards. But to stand on your standards, you've got to set them.
Oh, yes. To stand on your standards, you have to set them. Anyone who didn't hear that, just to stand on your standards, you have to set them. You can't have standards if you haven't set them. And the fact that you just said that that person went from account management to photography because of how you were able to show, look, this is a different skill set to what you usually have, and this is how it will benefit you. This is what I love to talk about, because what do you bring to the table? A lot of people, when you say that, they start listing things, but I don't want you to list things. I want you to tell me how what you bring to the table impact someone else. How does what you bring to the table matter? Whenever I say I know what I bring to the table, it's because I know how it can help someone else. I know how it can help someone in my family, my friends, a client, or my company, whatever it is. I know the impact of what I bring to the table. We're not just here listing credentials. We're going to let you know, actually, being able to do this will help me in your company to be able to do this for you. And that's what you essentially did for this person who wanted to move into photography. You connected the dots. And in my coaching program, I talk about this all the time. The things that will help you the most in your career are connection, which is connecting the dots for other people. Yeah. Just like what Charmaine was saying about you're waiting to be seen. No. You need to connect the dots for other people. Mm-hmm. And you need to show the connection between what you have and the impact it makes for someone else. Communication is another one. So connection and communication are two things I talk about all the time. Because if you can make the connection, but you're not now communicating it, nobody knows. And they're just example of what Charmaine just said. She said, like, no one is watching you and waiting to promote you if you're not letting them know that's even what you want. They might think you're happy where you are and they'll leave you just there. And some, don't get me wrong, there are managers that will leave you there because they're scared to lose you because it will make their job harder. And we're not saying there's not both sides of it, but either way, if you are not vocal, if you do not make yourself be seen, you will not know whether it's someone trying to hold you back or you holding yourself back. You have to actually have these conversations. So I just love the way that you put that. And before we finish, have you got any final thoughts? Because we have busted a lot of myths.
Yes.
We have told these people who is going to check you, like, repeatedly. We have let them know these are things that you should be doing in your career that we know a lot of you aren't. And after listening to this, we hope that you go out there and do it. But what are your final thoughts? Have you got anything that you want to share with anyone listening? Just your final thoughts on this subject.
It is that. Who's going to check you? You know, have confidence in yourself. And if you don't set your standards, as I said, someone else is going to do it for you. So get clear on that. And if you're not sure what it is that you bring to the table, start there. Ask people around you, what am I really good at? If I wasn't doing this, what could you see me doing? Sometimes we need to hear it from other people, people we've worked with, to be able to help us see ourselves the way other people see us, because we're the ones in our heads, right? The way that somebody else sees you, that's what you're projecting out in the world, regardless of what demons or gremlins you're fighting with internally. So listen to those people, because how you're showing up is what they're basing what they view you as around, not what mm-hmm. you are telling yourself.
Love that. Thank you so much for joining me. This has been such a good chat. Guys, this is what we talk like when we meet each other, when we met in person. This is what we were like. We were just talking, bouncing. She would say something. I'd be like, oh my gosh, think of this. And then I would say something. And then Charmaine would have this really good point. And it was just so good. We had to turn it into an episode. I had to get you guys to hear the things that I've spoken about outside of the boardroom, outside of your corporate offices. This is what we do. And this is how we help people. So I want, Charmaine, can you tell the listeners how they can connect with you, how they can work with you? Like, just let them know.
Yes. So my website is chaptertoo.com. And my email is info@chaptertoo.com. So info@chaptertoo, that's chaptertoo.com. Shoot me an email. Happy to help.
Oh, and can they find you on LinkedIn as well? I'm going to drop the drop the information. Your LinkedIn is so good. Like your Wednesday
Thank you. And I have to tell everyone that you are a big reason why I started being more vocal on LinkedIn, because of our text and the conversations that we would have that nobody knows about, right? All those things as we were building our relationship before it got to the point of come on the podcast, right? So I really want to thank you for that as well. And yeah, follow me on LinkedIn, Charmaine Greenford. You're not going to find another one. No one else has that double barrel last name except my identical twin sister, but she doesn't have my first name, so you can find me.
I will put everything in the show notes as well, so that the listeners can connect to you. This has been such a great episode. Yeah. I'm so happy that it came up so organically and so naturally. Yeah. And I was waiting for us to be able to do something together. And I'm so happy this was it. I know we'll do so many more things in the future. Thank you. And yeah, guys, I will see you in the next episode.
Thank you.
I hope this episode gave you exactly what you needed and motivated you to confidently take steps towards your next career move. If you enjoyed it, screenshot and share it on your socials, tag me on Instagram, and come join my community of amazing women working on leveling up their confidence and career. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.